Joining us this morning from the state capitol is Representative Barb Ehart. Representative, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
It's good to have you with us. And you made it to March, Barb. How do you feel?
Oh, man. I actually can't believe it's March. Once you get here, time is like in a vacuum. But yes, we're here towards the end, and we still have some things to get done.
I know you, Barb. You're hoping to get the legislative session done in time for March Madness, aren't you? So you can catch some basketball.
Well, we're always here for that. So we do watch some of that here. Yep.
I gotcha. Has signee day ever been delayed because you were watching March Madness?
No, but let's just say things leading up to signee day didn't interfere with a lot of people here checking in on March Madness.
I gotcha.
All yeah. Right. Well, Barb, you survived that bizarre committee hearing yesterday, the one where we believe it's Representative Skaug was introducing a bill concerning parents' rights to understand what's going on with their children when they potentially are trying to transition. Why don't you give us a play-by-play of what happened in that meeting and how it kind of came off the rails for just a few brief moments?
Well, I mean, obviously meetings or committee meetings like that are contentious. The funny thing is my medical parental rights bill already covers this, but it covers it from a higher level. And it's this is where the schools have tried to get around with the Band-Aid bill. So I just introduced it yesterday as we've been working on it all session long, but Representative Skaug's got much more particular. So it's just kind of funny as I was listening to them. And so one of the questions I asked Matt Sharp with Alliance Defending Freedom, who came on to testify, if the bills would conflict or if they would act as companions. And of course, you know, knowing the answer, he definitely said it'd act as companions. But I just thought it was so funny that they're in there to protest what really already is. And this is just clarifying it even more. So as they became frustrated when it became obvious we had to get back to the floor, everybody wasn't going to be heard. And so you kind of heard this roll of, you know, first it started with one person and then another standing up, yelling, you know, some very niceties that they wanted to share. And then finally, you know, I think some of these things start to become planned. And so I was sitting, of course, at that point of our vice chair, next to our vice chair, Joe Alfieri. And, you know, it was, you need to clear the room. And some were already leaving at that point, and we're learning more, you know, kind of get on the same page because we anticipate this is going to happen more. The whole room, even those who weren't protesting, should have been cleared. If that's the kind of behavior that people want to bring to the Capitol, it's not going to be tolerated. It's definitely a place of decorum when it comes to the committee meetings, and it has to be, or we'll never be able to do the work of the people.
We're talking with Representative Barb Ehart. Barb, I wanted to talk. Immigration obviously has been a big issue this legislative session, at least on the House side. There have been a number of bills, whether it's E-Verify or a bill that would require local police departments to get the federal ICE training. There's just been a lot of issues there. But it looks like a number of those bills have been funneled into State Affairs Committee, which I think a nickname for the chairman's drawer there should be Kevorkian, because that's where this legislation goes to die quite often. Is that frustrating being on the House side? There's an awful lot of work that's put into getting these bills passed, to vetting them, to refining them. And then when you see the hard work that goes into that, you get the bill passed and then it goes to the other end of the Capitol and gets completely ignored. Is that frustrating in the House? Are lawmakers frustrated on the House side?
Well, I think that many of us are. My committee and that I chair in local government has heard some of these heavy bills, actually. And we spent hours in committee listening to it, going through that process. And it's not without its, you know, stress. So to see them held up on the other side definitely is disappointing. I certainly will say, though, I know with legislation that I bring, you know, I often will have worked hard to have Well, hopefully to try to pre-position myself in the legislation so that it will, you know, hopefully receive that hearing and you know, some of those discussions are discussions that I've had beforehand. But yes, when everything just goes in the drawer so that then we get to the end and now they start hearing some things and then they say, well, we just ran out of time. It was funny. I'd walked across the, you know, the aisle, so to speak, or the rotunda yesterday because I needed to visit with a couple chairmen. And it was funny. They're like, Representative, they're not there. I'm like, oh, are they gone already? Oh no, they're up on the floor and they've been there for a while. I mean, so, and you know, it's like, so you mean to tell me that they're never on the floor until the end and then they're always on the floor. So, you know, anyway, those are things that I know leadership tries to talk out in the beginning. And it just seems that there's a pattern and that's how the Senate does things. And yeah, it can be hard and frustrating.
So sort something out for me, and maybe you don't know, this might be one of those weird mysteries that can't be explained, but one of the reasons why we hear bills get put in a drawer is there's just so many bills that they can't get through all of them. But yet, if I look at the House, the House has passed three times the amount of legislation that the Senate has. So are they really so busy? That just seems like an imbalance to me from people saying they're too busy to get legislation through and they're only a third as productive as the House is in terms of passing legislation.
I think you're definitely onto something. There's absolutely no reason that they can't not be hearing things. Our committees have far more people on them to account for the fact that they have fewer people. And we might have an extra committee or two, one of which isn't used, such as Ways and Means, until the very end. And so I don't think you can really count that. They have their own committee to bring things through. They do things, you know, differently. So basically we're close to the same number of committees and we're about doing the people's business. And I think that's what we all need to be doing. I know sometimes the people out there get frustrated and I think it's more ideological. Like, why are you hearing this? And, you know, we basically you're hearing things that legislators want heard and they usually want it heard because their people want it heard. So you're trying to sift through at times, especially if you're a chairman, is this something that rises to the top? And for the most part, I, for example, work to try to hear those things that our people, you know, as our legislators, they come to it, want heard. And so for the Senate then to be a stopgap is, well, it's disappointing. It is disappointing. Yeah. Things should, I do believe things, after, if things pass one body, I believe the other body should hear it. And if they don't, there should be strong reason why they don't. But if it does pass and pass over there, because we don't, you know, a lot of things fail on our side too. So it's not like they have to hear everything we hear.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Give us an update on some of the legislation you've worked on. I know some of it has moved forward, some of it hasn't. So tell us what's happening.
Well, you know, the main thing that's moving forward, hopefully, is that I've spent more time on than anything else would be some changes and updates to what was then started on the Senate Bill 1329 from 2024, which was the pro tems and my medical parental rights, something that we'd both been working on, and I'd been working on it actually for a while. So with the negotiated changes and this and that, I got it introduced in Ways and Means yesterday. We'll hopefully have a hearing. I've added the speaker's name to it. It is one that's anticipated to move forward. We've addressed the Band-Aid part. We've addressed where a couple of the hospitals would not treat someone with a broken leg to make it very clear we're supposed to be treating serious bodily injuries. 988, the suicide hotline, was never meant to be something that could not be called. So we've added language to that. You know, so it's just, it's been some fixes such as that. So there's been, you know, conversations with a lot of different entities to get to this point. That is probably my main piece of legislation yesterday, of course, on the floor, then got into, you know, what we do sometimes, which is help our constituents. So you heard the military chaplain bill and some very bizarre arguments against it after we had shown that the military chaplain, if it's military, people want to conflate chaplain with pastor. A military chaplain goes through far different training than any other group or entity that might use the word chaplain. And so they are in a position and certified through the military as counselors. And so the legislation being heard was something taking from current law, which says we're supposed to then work with military so they can transition that into civilian. And it specifically says they're not supposed to have to take a test, mostly because of all the tests they take in the military. So that was something that was specifically helping one of our locals there here in our area, Southeast Idaho, that is a phenomenal counselor. So I've had that, you know, I've also had the annexation, which ended up being very highly listened to by the governor. And I think we answered all the questions on unique situations. I worked with the Association of Idaho Cities, with Representative Weber, Representative Green. The realtors got behind it. Kind of important when things get annexed and if part of your property is basically taken out through expansion, through roads, through service, something that someone in our area is facing. And apparently, as it turns out, realtors face this a lot, as Representative Weber and Green also had. So ended up, I think it's, I'd like to hope that one will move forward. We've got some things still coming up with enrollment, daycare, but more minor things compared to some of the things I've had in the past as my time has been on the medical parental rights.
Barb, have you heard of the Party Cohesion Index?
I think I listened to you guys talk about it this morning. And yes, the Party Cohesion Index, but yes. I didn't hear all the scores.
Well, there's several interesting things and too many to talk about here. We are limited on time. But basically, it's a measurement of how often a particular lawmaker votes with their majority, with their party, in votes that are split, meaning one party's majority votes one way, the other party's majority votes the other way. On the low end, of course, is Stephanie Mickelson, Dustin Manwaring, Ben Furman, Britt Raybould, Josh Wheeler, and others. They're down in the high 50s and low 60s. You, on the other hand, have come in at 95%. Right behind you is Marco Erickson at 94.8%. Yeah. So I'll send you a link after the show's over so you can take a look at it.
You know what? That doesn't surprise me. I tell people all the time that, excuse me, goodness, morning voice. I tell people all the time that there are a lot of things on which Marco and I vote a lot alike. But, you know, that's good to hear, because I do believe, you know, when I look at my votes and I look at the things that are important to the people, you know, I'm a Republican, and I, you know, oftentimes we've got kind of a 47 or 50, you know, kind of in their majority vote. And then we have about 13 to 18 other legislators who are voting the other way. And,
yeah,
you know, sometimes I just don't get it.
Well, I can tell you right now, and I'll have to subtract 4 from this number, there's about 18 lawmakers that are below 78%, something like that. So it's those lawmakers you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, well, Barb, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your service, and we wish you the best in these final days of the legislative session. And it looks like you do have a primary opponent. So we'll be chatting with you another time soon about your race this year.
You know what? I appreciate that, and look forward to it. And we'll get the work done here, get back to Idaho Falls, and help remind the people of the great work that I've done for them.